Welcome to October's Cybersecurity Insights, sponsored by Leidos. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
Data seems to be the key for the future, but collecting it is not the problem. For the Navy, it's harnessing and making use of the information. That's what it wants to do. Deputy Chief of Naval Operations for Information Warfare, Vice Admiral Jan Tai, explains some of the issues the Navy is having with its data. And this was recorded by Federal News Radio's Scott Massioni. And just before we hear from Vice Admiral Tai, tell us where she spoke and what she was talking about.
Sure. This was at a AFSEA event in Arlington. And, this was Navy IT Day, which focuses on a lot of naval information technology issues. And, she was giving us kind of an overview of what the Navy's IT enterprise is like and where it needs to go in the next 10 to 30 years even.
All right. So here's Tai.
We start thinking about our future naval networks with respect to the great power competition that we're facing in the maritime domain, unlike any other, in previous history, and the adversaries we have to face. In order to be able to defeat those adversaries, we really have to think about our ability to make decisions faster and better than the adversary. And that's what it's ultimately going to come down to, sort of that decision superiority. So what must we do in the architecting of future naval networks? Well, I would say on our rainbow, it starts at the beginning with the data. The data we collect from our ISR sensors, the data that we collect about our people, the data we collect about our financial systems, the data we collect off of actual hardware in terms of the performance of that hardware. That data has been collected in various forms with various degrees of accuracy, for many, many, many years. That data has also been spread around in various types of data centers around the country and other places that the Navy owns and operates.
And that's Vice Admiral Jan Tai. So I guess the question, Scott, is with all of that data and all the sources you mentioned, is this going to be organized in some way, or how are they going to get it so it's usable?
I think that's the problem, is that the Navy has all this data, even going back to the 1960s, when they had punch cards and things like that. But, how are they going to harness it? How are they going to organize it? How are they going to make any of these things actually work in their favor? You can have a it's almost that paradox of choice. You have this huge amount of hay and you need the needle in it, but it's more like finding the right needle in a pile of needles, right? So the Navy really needs to find a way it can harness it. And there's a multitude of ways they can do that, but it's just going to take a number of years before they can finally get on that plane.
And she's talking about in terms of national security and not just operating the Navy more efficiently, but also making it a more efficient, instrument of national security and national enforcement.
That's right. Well, she brought up, our adversaries, and those adversaries that she was talking about weren't necessarily Al-Qaeda and ISIS, but more China and Russia, the other bigwigs in the world stage. And what they're doing is the exact same thing. They're collecting data and trying to distill it down to its most potent form. And so, think about the Arctic, right? The United States is trying to find a way that it can put its presence within the Arctic and deter Russia in there. We're looking at the rate that ice is melting, where we can place ships, how the water flows and currents are going, doing ISR and surveillance. There's so many different things that they're getting a day, petabytes of information, but who's looking at it all? And that's sure. The real question. And so something like a chief data officer, which is the Navy's looking into, would be someone that can actually figure out where we can put this information and where it can go.
Okay, well, we know the Army has one. Let's hear more from Vice Admiral Tai. I guess she's going to talk here about the storage of all that data.
And we've been on a journey, as you probably know, to consolidate those data centers, for the past 5 years at least, consolidating into enterprise data centers. And now we're thinking more broadly about how we go into the cloud, how we take that data into the cloud. So even for some of that data that's out there, maybe you hop over the enterprise data centers and go right into the cloud. That would be, our best desire is to get after movement into the cloud as fast as possible to give us the the flexibility that we need. Part of that calculus requires a data strategy that makes sense of the data that we're moving to the cloud, which data needs to go to which kind of clouds, which data needs to be organized together, what are the standards by which we're collecting that data. In some cases, you find that we've collected data that is similar but not exactly the same, and it doesn't tell the same story every day. So that's not going to be satisfying. So we've been using, actually, for several years, but reinvigorated, our functional area managers, you know, those people in charge of, prime example, our manpower, personnel, training, and education data, to rationalize, you know, what's the data they need, what's the way that they're going to architect it, where are they going to put it, and sort of get on that journey as functional area managers for all the different functional areas that the Navy cares about and has to make decisions on in the Navy. Only then can we apply, you know, modern data science to the data that we have to be able to make better decisions about it. Only then can we write the sophisticated analytics that help inform the decisions we're going to make, be it productivity decisions, be it warfighting decisions. Only then can we apply those kinds of analytics to be able to get after machine learning, human-machine teaming, you know, decision aids for warfighting commanders, making better decisions about predictive logistics, and you know, generally the artificial intelligence that we would like to be interfacing with to help make better decisions faster. It's that simple.
And again, that's Vice Admiral Jan Tai of the Navy. In studio with me now is Federal News Radio Scott Massioni. And so she had kind of a three-tier process at this data nirvana. She mentioned, first of all, the storage architecture, and whether it's Navy data centers, DISA data centers, or commercial clouds. Then there's the architecture of how you look at the data in terms of functionality, regardless of where it's stored. And she said when you get those out of the way, then you can do the analytics. So my question for you, Scott, is your understanding that the Navy has a program in place to carry them through those steps?
Yeah, well, I'm not exactly sure that they have a program to exactly get where they want. You know, there's ways to start that process. So like I said before, there's a CDO, a chief data officer, which may be able to harness that information in certain ways. But
they don't have that person yet.
Exactly.
Or that organization.
They're in the process of trying to figure that out. And getting even to the cloud and putting things in the cloud to make it more accessible is a whole other can of worms in itself. As you know, DISA had delegated the services their own cloud acquisition policies at this point, where they can figure out how they want to buy their cloud services. So figuring out where you want to buy the cloud, how you can access that cloud, how you can make sure the information within that cloud is safe is a whole a whole problem within itself there.
Yeah, she didn't exactly mention cybersecurity per se of that data, but when you've got it in all these different data centers coming from all these different sources and stored in all these different places, then you've got a cybersecurity challenge, you might say.
Right, and we know that the Defense Department has come out with these sort of security levels that certain companies have to get to that are FedRAMP Plus, basically, is what they are. And so, you know, Amazon Web Services is the first to have ever gotten the highest clearance. But you have to think, if there were ever a huge breach with Amazon Web Services, that would be classified information that would be easily distributed from, you know, by a hacker or anything like that. So the cybersecurity in itself has a lot of trust within the private industry, even though the United States government has created these standards for security for them.
All right, let's go back to Vice Admiral Tai, and she talks about some of the future requirements.
When you get to the end of that rainbow on the data side, you find out, well, the data we're collecting may not be the right data. So then you got to go back to the beginning. So it's not really a rainbow, it's really a circle. But you know, having sort of that big picture vision in mind, having people working the different elements is what we've got going on today. And only with that knowledge can we, or at least the direction that we're headed, can we well architect the network of the futures that we need. You got to understand, where's your data going to be, where your users are going to be, where's you going to do compute, what's the transport to get there. You know, we have to understand that in order to be able to get the next generation of NMCI, NGEN, you know, the recompete, all of that. You'll hear a little bit about that today. But you have to be able to visualize how You know, what's the network got to be able to support? What kind of decisions does it have to be able to support? Where's the data living? And what are the services that our users need? And how are we providing those, you know, in order to get to that next state in naval architectures? That applies to our shore enterprise, both in CONUS and overseas. It applies to our afloat enterprise, where we know that maritime operations will happen in, you know, more and more contested environments. And it even applies to our tactical data links, you know, how we move data to make decisions or for targeting solutions, you know, has a lot to do with the data standards that we set from the beginning. OPNAV in 2 and 6, the Digital Warfare Office is working that aspect of it and the interoperability, you know, between those systems. So creating that grander vision of standards for interoperability and allowing for our data to traverse multiple paths in ways that we have designed is what's going to make us faster, more capable, and beat the adversary.
And that's Vice Admiral Jan Tighe of the Navy talking about all things data. And I think she got to the nut of this, and that is they've got this recompete that's been going on for years now to replace NMCI. And I guess, Scott, my question for you is, and by the way, Scott Massioni in studio with me from Federal News Radio, I wonder when they started to do this recompete, if the whole idea of data and data analytics had dawned on the Navy at that point several years ago. It's something that's newly come into thinking in a big way.
Well, that's a good question. And I mean, a lot of people know this contract has morphed over the years, and maybe those requirements have changed due to the need for data to be accessed by more and more people. And I think one of the more interesting things that she brought up was how data needs to be accessed by everyone, you know, and we were talking earlier about how data, if you harness it correctly, can be very beneficial for the Navy, but it also has to do with the access to that data. So if you're in England and you're in the United States and you need to share that information that you're working on, Engine is the tool to do that at this point, right? And that's why I think the Navy is putting so much emphasis on Engine. And the thing about that is, you know, it's basically like Slack or Skype or something like that, where you can take video, you can take audio, different things like that, and share it. You can look at a map together and figure out what you need to do. So not only does the Navy need to figure out how it can harness data, but also how it can manipulate it together and communicate together.
Well, everything's turning into electrons, and I guess that'll be possible. Federal News Radio, Scott Massioni, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Check out Scott's story at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Tom Temin.
At Leidos, we know you're working to solve the world's big challenges. A cyber attack can cripple your efforts and put you on the defensive fast. We focus on end-to-end cybersecurity defense, not just the latest problem, so you can spend your time on what matters. Leidos, a Fortune 500 company delivering practical answers for a complicated world. Find out how we protect the world's biggest networks from the most sophisticated threats at Leidos.com/answers.
The Marine Corps wants to make cyber training part of boot camp. What's more, it's ramping up its civilian hiring in cyber positions starting in January. Federal News Radio Scott Massioni speaks with Marine Corps Forces Cyberspace Command Executive Director Greg Kendrick.
So in regards to the training, Scott, what we're doing is a couple years ago, General Reynolds and our staff at MAR4 Cyber created this commander's handbook for cyberspace operations. And so we've been going to each one of the commander's courses and then the general officer and senior executive entry-level courses and educating them on what you can do in regards to your networks, right? So this is commander's business. So that's where General Reynolds has been really focused on in regards to that. At the same time, we have been working with Training and Education Command and looking at each one of the schoolhouses has to also incorporate some type of cyber training. So for the School of Advanced Warfare or Marine Corps University, we have sent instructors down to be able to teach at Marine Corps Command and Staff for a small period of time. But eventually the service needs to be able to pick that up, right, and inculcate it into the standard training regimen from whenever you show up at either Paris Island, San Diego, or Quantico Officer Candidate School, wherever you end up entry level into the Marine Corps, all the way through your time and the different, whether it's Staff NCO Academy or Command and Staff, right, you also get part of cyber training. So it's just inculcated, and so it's a culture change, it's a mind shift, and everybody understands that everybody has a role to play, and that it is commander's business.
And are these things simple things like don't make your password 1234, or are they things like basic coding?
I'm not sure as far as basic coding yet. C4 has actually set up, though, part of the culture change is working with our C4 side of the house, and they've set up an application challenge, right, to be able to generate how can we generate the best applications within the Marine Corps and what applications do the Marines need, and then there's a winner. Right now it's on an annual basis that they're conducting that, so that, I guess, meets the coding side of the house. But in reality, it's more the simple, what can you do on a cyber hygiene side of the house? So it's changing passwords, it's network security, it's understanding what the actual real risk is and the threat to the network, making sure you clearly delineate before the non-secure side of the house, the secure network side of the house, watch your information. Don't use personal email accounts, right, for business or for passwords or network diagrams, et cetera, side of the house, right, but stay on the DOTIN or the Marine Corps network.
That's kind of interesting to me because this is the first time we've seen like a standardized cyber course for people coming into the military and right when they get there. What do you see maybe happening in the future, maybe 10, 20 years down the road? What might go into a basic training school on the cyber side of things?
So this is where I thought the Admiral had a nice talk with the avatar side of the house. So how do you – so from a culture perspective, if you start in grade school, right, so we grew up with Schoolhouse Rock. So what exactly do you start off in grade school and come in? And so the military would just be an extension of that training. I think 15 or 20 years from now we'll be there. But I do see it more avatar-based and probably gamification, right? So you can start to win points and you can win your badges and you kind of move forward in a deliberate and successive manner. You will come back and do the assessment to make sure that you don't forget the entry 101 training. But it's kind of like when you get to calculus, you've understood statistics and you've understood finite math. So you can build up to there, but calculus is still using statistics and finite math, right? So we want to be able to continue to take that next education level across the board.
You're listening to Marine Corps Forces Cyberspace Command Executive Director Greg Kendrick speaking with Federal News Radio Scott Massioni. More of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
At Leidos, we know you're working to solve the world's big challenges. A cyber attack can cripple your efforts and put you on the defensive fast. We focus on end-to-end cybersecurity defense, not just the latest problem, so you can spend your time on what matters. Leidos, a Fortune 500 company delivering practical answers for a complicated world. Find out how we protect the world's biggest networks from the most sophisticated threats at Leidos.com/answers.
We continue now with our interview with Marine Corps Forces Cyberspace Command Executive Director Greg Kendrick, speaking with Federal News Radio's defense reporter Scott Massioni.
I wanted to ask, moving a little toward the shortfall of cyber warriors, there's this exempted program that's going on, and you're taking advantage of that. How's the Marine Corps taking advantage of that, and where do you see that one going?
So how's the Marine Corps taking advantage? So what we're doing is, with the cyber-accepted service, we've been all in our our manpower civilian side of the house from our Manpower and Reserve Affairs has really expedited and prioritized our civilian hiring packages. With our Human Resources Office, they have definitely supported all of the cyber civilian packages that we have coming through and moving forward as quick as we can. So we've received tremendous service support in moving forward. As we've now entered the first initial stages of the cyber accepted service, we've been the lead and coordinating with MPC as well as all the other and Human Resources. So Manpower Civilian and Human Resources Office, we've been coordinating with the service on that side of the house, and we're undergoing some education right now and working with the joint partnership, but the OSD team has been very savvy. And so this is where I talked about earlier, about 7 months ago, we worked with the OSD team and Office of Personnel Management to get a special exemption for MARFOR Cyber so that we can add additional retention incentives. And so we provided the hard data, working with the OSD team, to OPM, and OPM granted us the authority. So when you look at the authority, there's NSA and then there's MARFOR Cyber that has the authority to offer those additional incentives. So we're helping to work. The cyber accepted service team has helped educate us on what's on the art of the possible. OPM has maintained broad minds. And so I think across the board, we've really learned a lot, and we're going to jump into the cyber accepted service in January with 2 feet and move out very aggressively to meet the commandant's needs and the joint warfighter's needs of being able to support the MAGTAF commander. We have about one-third of our cyber mission force and our command are civilians. So that's the way that the Marine Corps has chosen to get after this capability. So we want to be able to ensure that we bring the best civilians in a rapid manner to the commandant, and then also ensure that those civilians get training opportunities and opportunities in the private sector, you know, public and private, to get on the best technology with the warfighter ethos and the education of the Marine Corps side of the house to bring the best skill sets, if you will, from the apprentice, the journeyman, and the master to the MAGTAF commander.
You talked about putting an emphasis on apprentices and really investing in those. Can you just kind of explain what that apprentice role is and how they kind of move up toward that journeyman and so forth?
Right. So I think the apprentice role is somebody that's got the technical skill set coming out of school, if you will, or maybe some on-the-job training, and they want to serve their country or they want to do public service. So they would come in for anywhere from 3 to 5 years, and they learn what the service is about. They'd see the operational tempo and the use of skill sets. So they would bring energy and desire and then kind of nascent skill sets, right, school training. They would gain experience, gain additional insight to to a different skill set or different tool sets. They'd be able to grow from apprentice to journeyman. They would understand the, if you will, the growth pattern to go from apprentice to journeyman to master. They'd also learn across the board on a lateral side of the house, right? So let's say you want to be a defensive cyber operator. You know, you have the hunt, you have the cyber threat emulation, you have the incident response, right? So maybe you come in with one skill set, but you want to learn about the other skill sets, and you become more of a multidisciplined cyber warrior instead of just one. And then after 3 or 5 years, you know, the op tempo is pretty high right now. And maybe you want to go and you want to have a family, or you just want to take a little bit of a breather. So you take an operational pause and you go to the private sector and you really hone in with maybe a particular niche skill set. Or you do a career broadening tour at that point, right? You just want to go out and you want to learn maybe incident management from the private sector side of the house with one of the private sector firms that do that side of the house. And then you come back and then, you know, after 3 to 5 years or 1 year or however many years, you want to come back to the public sector again. You won't lose any of your credentials or you won't lose your time in service. You can immediately come back in at the same grade that you were, if not a higher grade, and then bring those additional skill sets and that additional experience that you've learned and continue to help the mission and grow. And so that's it's actually a very streamlined, if you will, direct hire type process that the Cyber Accepted Service is going to bring. And quite frankly, we're pretty excited about it.
Just wanted to ask about the Deputy Commandant for Information. It's a fairly new position. How's that going? And
well, I have to let Lieutenant General O'Donohue speak for where it's going. He is a new Deputy Commandant for Information, but we are here to support him. And as he looks at the information environment, he's asked us to help support the MF Information Group on the from the cyber perspective and energize that, and then also continue the education piece that we talked about for the rest of the service within the cyber portfolio. So we are definitely focused and energized to support General O'Donohue as he kind of steps off as DCI. But where his vision is and where that takes him, I'll let him speak or his staff speak to the information environment aspect for the Marine Corps.
That's Marine Corps Forces Cyberspace Command Executive Director Greg Kendrick speaking with Federal News Radio Scott Mossioni. Check out Scott's story at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to this week's Cybersecurity Insights Show, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search cybersecurity.